Good morning. How is everybody doing today? I will open the House Education Finance Committee and call you to order. Thank you for settling in. First order of business is we have two sets of minutes. Representative Purcell, our resident minute person. Have you had a chance to look at February 9th minutes that we are bringing back from yesterday with the corrections included?
Give me a moment, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Jordan?
It appears that Mazeppa is still misspelled.
Okay, well, we'll add that technical correction.
With that technical correction, I move the minutes.
Representative Purcell moves the minutes for February 9th with a technical correction on the spelling of Mazeppa. Anybody have any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes for February 9th are adopted. We also have the minutes for February 15th. Representative Pryor, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for February 15th?
I have. So moved.
Representative Pryor moves the minutes for February 15th. Although, any questions on those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The minutes for February 15th are adopted. Members, we have with us Representative Stevenson and House File 100. The chair will move House File 100 before the committee with the intentions to re-refer this to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Stevenson, welcome to the Education Finance Committee. Members, we're going to only focus on the portions of the bill that our committee has jurisdictions over. Those are Article 6, Section 6 and 20. Article 9, Sections 1, Subdivision 5. Representative Stevenson, at this point, I think we're going to have Ben Johnson from House Research walk through the education-related sections of the House file before we turn it over to you. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, Ben Johnson from House Research. I am going to walk through those sections briefly. The first section that was mentioned is Article 6, Section 6. That begins on page 195 of the bill at line 23. I hear a lot of pages flipping. I'll give a second.
Yes, and members, if you can keep your rubber binder close after we're done with this bill, just to save a few trees, could you please bind them up again, and the bill might be able to move over to the next committee without doing more duplication. Sorry, Mr. Johnson, go for it.
Madam Chair, so that section requires the Commissioner of Education, in consultation with the Commissioners of Health and Human Services, local district and school health education specialists, and other qualified experts, to identify model programs to educate middle and high school students on the health effects of cannabis use and substance use. It requires that the program address several specific issues, including signs of substance use disorder, treatment options, and healthy coping strategies. It requires school districts and charter schools to implement a comprehensive education program on cannabis use and substance use beginning in the 2026-27 school year. The model programs and the school programs must be consistent with some existing requirements that are in Chapter 120B. The districts must also have a procedure for parents and guardians to review materials and be able to opt out of instruction. And finally, that section permits districts and charters to establish youth councils to employ peer-to-peer education. Madam Chair, moving to Article 6, Section 20, this is on page 201 and begins at line 28. Again, page 201, line 28. This particular section is part of a larger group of sections that deal with employee testing. Currently, Minnesota law contains provisions that govern when and how alcohol and drug testing can take place in a workplace. For many jobs, this bill would remove cannabis from the general category of drugs and the drug testing provisions and treat cannabis more like alcohol and alcohol testing. It means things like random testing of employees for cannabis use would not be permitted, again, in most situations. Testing would be permitted if there was evidence that an employee was impaired or the employee got into a workplace accident, situations such as that. However, the bill does contain many exceptions to that limitation, and the section that is before this committee is one of the exceptions. It includes a list of employment in positions that require face-to-face care, education, supervision, or counseling of children. In short, for teachers and most school employees, the bill would permit random testing for cannabis use. Know, however, that these statutory provisions are a default, which means that negotiated agreements, such as those between a union and an employer, can establish different standards, standards that are different from this default in the statute. Madam Chair, moving to the final portion of the bill. This is Article 9. There's only one section. It's Section 1. I believe it's now Subdivision 6. There have been some amendments. It's on page 259, beginning at line 11. This is an appropriation related to that first section that I walked through. It appropriates currently $36,000 in fiscal year 24, $29,000 in fiscal year 25, which would make it ongoing appropriation. That goes to the Department of Education for the work related to the required education programs. Madam Chair, I believe that completes the walkthrough of the sections you identified as relevant to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. With that, Representative Stevenson, over to you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House File 100 is the bill to legalize adult use cannabis in the state of Minnesota. Members, Minnesotans are ready for this change. Our current laws about cannabis are doing more harm than good, and Minnesotans deserve the freedom and respect to make their own decisions about cannabis. The bill, as has been discussed, is before the committee on fairly narrow grounds that Mr. Johnston has very ably articulated, but I'm happy to answer your questions. I understand there's a few testifiers as well.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. House file has been posted on the Education Finance Committee website since Thursday, February 9th. The public was given a deadline of 2 p.m. yesterday, Wednesday 15th, to sign up to testify. Testimony should be limited to Article 6, Section 6 and 20, Article 9, Sections 1, Subdivision 6. We had three testifiers who met the committee deadline for testimony. Those who did not make the deadline can continue to submit written testimony to the committee administrator, and it will be distributed to the committee members. And members, we have a rather full agenda today, so we want to make sure our testifiers keep to the two-minute testimony so that we can have time for questions. With that, I'll ask up Linda Staton. And then on deck, we have Glenn McElvish, who's going to be remote, and Oliver Steinberg. Thank you. Please state your name for the record. Make sure you pull the mic close. State your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Linda Stanton. Yeah. Thank you for listening to my testimony today. Recent data from Minnesota Poison Control shows increased cannabis poison control calls for THC in cannabis increased 21% after legalization July 1st. Despite being promised that legalization and regulation would reduce calls to poison control. For teens and adults, calls increased 103% after legalization in 2022. Yesterday, a Rocky Mountain PBS report stated that, quote, more young Colorado children are consuming marijuana despite efforts to stop them. Like Colorado, I fear that Minnesotans are wrongly determined to commercialize a potent drug, today's new THC concentrates, and other marijuana products without truly preparing citizens. Just as Colorado barreled ahead legalizing 10 years ago, Minnesota has forgotten to protect its most vulnerable residents, its kids. The time for education to prevent more edibles and other THC exposures for kids and youth should start now, not in 2024 or 2026, as the bill states. That is too late. We are not ready for cannabis legalization. The PBS report stated that, quote, between fiscal years 2015 and 2020, the State Health Department spent roughly $222.8 million on marijuana education campaigns. Despite these efforts, Colorado failed to adequately inform parents and other responsible adults to successfully motivate them to protect children and youth. What will it take to get Minnesota leaders to truly protect children and youth? Public education warnings must start before legalization, not after. What does it take to get started on this? This bill is outdated. It has not kept up with the times, the quickly changing pot environment. I urge you to vote no on the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Glenn McElvish. That's remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yep. Madam Chair, committee members, and Representative Stevenson, thank you for allowing me to speak today on HF 100. My name is Glenn McElfresh, and I'm a co-founder of Plift, a hemp-derived beverage company. One of the most impactful experiences of my life was becoming a peer tutor at my high school's literacy center. I learned critical thinking, reading, and writing skills, how to give and take feedback without taking it personally, and how to teach those same skills to my peers. I never would have known it at the time, but those same skills helped me navigate my way through the often ambiguous world of legal marijuana. So I was pleasantly surprised to see provisions authorizing a youth council so students can provide peer-to-peer education on cannabis use and substance use contained in HF 100. I applaud Representative Stevenson for including peer-to-peer education in HF 100, and I look forward to seeing the creative solutions developed by youth councils across Minnesota. I also applaud Representative Stevenson for respecting a parent's right to choose and including a parental review and opt-out mechanism in HF 100. While I sincerely hope that every student successfully completes an education program, parental choice empowers parents and drives schools to be more responsive to their needs. I'd like to offer two areas for improvement on the relevant sections of HF 100. In Article 6, please consider expressly prohibiting abstinence-only education, as well as adding privacy protections for conversations between youth council members and their peers. In Article 9, please consider increasing appropriations to the Commissioner of Education to fund these youth education programs. $75,000 over 2 years is not enough funding. The student education elements contained in HF 100 are progressive, flexible, and respectful of all Minnesotans. While I implore you to consider increasing the level of funding for these programs, I sincerely believe HF 100's framework for cannabis use education programs could become model policy for the nation. Madam Chair, committee members, and Representative Stevenson, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, we have Oliver Steinberg. Either one, just settle in and state your name for the record and proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Oliver Steinberg. I'm a resident of St. Paul, and I'm appearing today as a private citizen, speaking for no organization or party. Now, with respect to Article 6, Section 6 of House File 100, education on cannabis use and substance use, the idea is not only commendable, if wisely implemented, it's essential. It is indispensable to reaching the stated goals of this bill. In a free society, education and not coercion is the appropriate way to try to modify or encourage or discourage the personal behavior of adults whose actions don't directly harm other individuals. Now, in educating young people, always remember the oldest story in the book. It's the tale of the forbidden fruit. Don't overdo the negativity. And for too long, lurid warnings have backfired. We're talking about pot, not plutonium. And there's still too much confusion, ignorance, and mistaken or delusory beliefs on this topic among three powerful classes: politicians, the press, and law enforcement. That's the sad fact that accounts for the origin and perpetuation of the legal fiction of so-called marijuana. Much of what's defective in House File 100, which is bound to impair its effectiveness as a law, results from the absurd attempt to define hemp and cannabis as distinct entities. Any linguist will tell you that cannabis is simply the Greco-Latin cognate word for which the English version is hemp. I guess I've run out of time here.
Okay. Why don't you just wrap it up in a few sentences? That would be great.
Because I did have several specific suggestions here on changing the or adding to Subdivision 1 of Section 6. And you'll find that in my written statement there. These additional parenthetical clauses, education about the anthropological assessment of the role of psychoactive substances in human culture and society, the historical record of prohibition laws, their socioeconomic effects, their political purposes, and their counterproductive consequences, and the botany, history, and usefulness of hemp to humanity. And finally, the authors and the supporters of House File 100 have no interest or incentive in furnishing cannabis to children and actively aim to discourage that. The existing clandestine cannabis industry includes too many actors who have no such scruples.
Okay, Mr. Steinberg, could you please wrap it up? Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
With that, members, as I said, those are the folks that have signed up that had since February 9th to sign up. Other folks, if you still have written testimony, please feel free to send it our way. And members, I think we'll just open up right away to questions for Representative Stevenson, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I have two questions. I think one's for the bill author. And based on the testimony you heard, and I'm looking at this graph about cannabis exposure in Minnesota, Colorado, and Washington. And as I look at it, it looks like a trend of increased exposure started before sort of any legal change in Minnesota. I'm wondering if you can sort of explain what we're seeing here and maybe respond to some of that testimony.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greenman. Yeah, I did provide the committee with the graph. You got the chart from the testifier. But I think actually they show the same story. It's the same data. It's coming from the same source, which is the Poison Control Center. And I wanted to offer the committee the context of states that have legalized cannabis, which I think is helpful when evaluating Minnesota data. So when you look at the chart that I provided you, you can see that Minnesota and Colorado, for the most of the last decade, have tracked very closely together in terms of exposure incidents for children to cannabis. And that is despite the fact that cannabis has been legal in Colorado since 2012 and remained illegal in Minnesota during that time. Minnesota diverged from Colorado beginning in 2021 and accelerating in 2022 in a significant fashion. We have significantly more calls to poison control in those years. As the chart you received from the testifier reminds you, our low-dose hemp-derived law went into effect in July 1 of 2022. In other words, the spike that is visible in this data predates by 18 months legalization. And in fact, when we look at the chart that you were provided, you will see that the number of incidents in the first half of 2022 is roughly the same as the second half of 2022, 89 versus 99. So I think that there is a problem here that needs a solution, which is that it's undeniable that we're seeing increases in child access to cannabis products. And the bill takes that very seriously by requiring packaging to be child-proof and requiring labeling requirements. Most recently, at the request of the Poison Control Center, we're adding language requiring that the poison control number be on the packaging itself so that there's easy access for people who have concerns. There's also funding for the Poison Control Center in Minnesota. And incidentally, if you didn't know, there's one Poison Control Center that serves the whole state. Apparently, they are located in the basement of the Hennepin County Government Center. I learned that in this by doing this bill. But anyway, we do fund the Poison Control Center, and there are a number of provisions in the bill designed to reduce access. I would also note a very significant provision is moving the low-dose products that are currently legal behind the counter. They will not be available as they are now. You would have to get them from behind the counter.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Representative Greenman, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's actually a different question, and it may be to Tim Strom, but I really appreciate that, Representative Stevenson, and how serious it takes this, as well as the education, the model programs, and the youth councils. And I'm wondering what resources are available to our school districts and our schools as they look to implement some of these model programs and these youth councils. I see that there's an appropriation for the state to sort of develop that, but I'm wondering what resources might be available to our schools and districts. I'm not sure who that question goes to.
Representative Stevenson, I believe there's some money in the bill for that. Do you want to go over that? And then we can always throw it to one of our members, our council up here.
Absolutely, Madam Chair, Representative Greenman. So as Mr. Johnson indicated, starting on page 259, there's an appropriation of the Department of Education, $36,000 in fiscal year 24 and 29 in fiscal year 25. That's to develop the programming that's required under the bill. And that is from the general fund. Obviously, the general fund will be supplemented by the cannabis tax revenue that this bill generates.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Last follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think what I'm asking is sort of what happens after the model programs are developed and our school districts are and schools are implementing it, what resources might be available that they're currently using, have, or that we should think about for implementing this program within our schools.
Representative Stevenson, would you like me to go to Mr. Strom?
That would be wonderful.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenman and others, school districts use their general education money for a variety of purposes, and some schools do spend small portions of that money on different youth council style activities, whether that's small amounts for a youth who's serving on the school board or various youth advisory committees, but each school district does that separately. There's a statewide appropriation for some student groups, and in some years in the past there's been a statewide appropriation for the Minnesota Youth Council, but that's a specific statewide organization. So in the individual districts, that would be a decision by the school board to use their general fund money for that purpose.
Thank you. Ms. Perra, maybe you all explain to how our health standards are unique and only one of our few standards that is the curriculum is up to the local school district and how that's usually handled.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Health standards are locally developed and implemented. They differ from math, science, for example, that are developed at the state level. The health standards are a completely local decision.
Thank you. Next up, we've got Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I have several questions, or I'll try to get through them quickly, but how many like child psychiatrists or doctors have you talked to about the detrimental effects that's happening to children from drug usage?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Altendorf, I don't have a number for you, but the answer is more than zero. I have talked to experts, medical experts, including experts in child psychiatry and neural development.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. One of my good friends, Dr. Chris Thurstone, is from Colorado. He is a child and addiction psychiatrist. He's actually world known, so I would ask you to Google him and to look up his website. As we all know, in 2012, marijuana was legalized in the state of Colorado, so we do have 10 years of very sound data of what's happening in Colorado. I was fortunate to be invited to the Mayo Hospital. It was Dr. Thurstone was there to present to the doctors in Rochester in Mayo about the detrimental effects of marijuana. This was, I believe, in 2019, but I'm sorry if I'm wrong on that date. So I want to go back to pre-COVID because we've seen in the last few years drops in scores and things like that that we could say potentially is happening because of COVID. However, the data I was looking at was pre-COVID. Again, so this would have been 2012 to 2019. And in his presentation, there was a very steady decline in kids dropping out of school. There was a decline in grades. There was an increase in car accidents, increase in children not attending schools, increase in dropouts, okay? So there is a lot of data, and I'm afraid we're not looking at that data. As a state legislator, I would like to look at specifically, and I have another question, sorry, but you know, I'm just reading, this is a quote from Dr. Thurstone's website. And again, this is a psychiatrist that deals with addictions with children, who has held children in his arms and helping them because of the detrimental effects of what is happening to these children. So just quoting from Dr. Thurstone, children are our most precious resource. I believe everyone agrees that. We should shield them from harm. We should not expose them to harm. If we truly want more positive outcomes for our nation, we must develop public drug policies from a new starting point. What is in the best interest of our kids? And I do believe every person in this room would agree with that statement that Dr. Thurstone made. So if we are doing no harm to children, specifically on your bill, which, sorry, it's 300 pages. I don't have a fiscal note. So do we know, next question, do we know specifically the financial ramifications for our schools to deal with increased drug usage, increase? We just heard from your testimony that's saying that we need to have peer support in the schools. So I'm sorry, without the fiscal note, what kind of impact are we going to have on the schools that the school is going to have this additional burden in the future?
Oh, Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Altendorf. So I think I would refer you first to the chart that I showed you earlier today, which shows that child access to cannabis roughly tracked Colorado during the last month between Minnesota and Colorado. That legalization did not have a meaningful impact on that because it was illegal here and legal there, and we had for a decade the same level of exposure. There's other data that I can send you to, including the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, that tracks on a state-by-state basis the level of teen consumption of cannabis, that actually shows a decline in cannabis consumption in states that have legalized cannabis, or hold steady to a slight decline in Colorado and Washington. I'm actually looking at the chart as we're talking right now, and I'd be very happy to share it with you. You cited a number of statistics which are indeed troubling about increasing in dropout rates. But I would caution you about the difference between correlation and causation and say that I don't know that there's any evidence at all that those dropout rates were tied to the legalization of cannabis. And at the point in time when we don't see increase in use among teens of cannabis, I question whether you can attribute that to the other aspect of this. I think that there is a lot in the bill focused on keeping cannabis away from young people. I think that our current system is failing to do that, unmistakably. It is not difficult if you are a young person in Minnesota who wants to consume cannabis to get cannabis. So if your goal is to keep cannabis away from young people, the current system is failing. And there's no evidence that prohibition helps keep cannabis out of the hands of young people. There is evidence that legalization doesn't make the problem worse, and the bill devotes a number of resources to try and address the problem.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I just want to jump in and say we don't need a fiscal note with this. There's a direct appropriation in the bill. That's why there isn't one for our specific jurisdictions in the bill. Representative, I'll turn it over for one more follow-up.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And I do appreciate what you're coming from, that you're saying that maybe, you know, there's different things that we have to look at. I do believe this is kind of like a shotgun approach, that by completely legalizing it, that we are asking for more problems. And I would go back to first quoting you, Representative Stevenson. You said we need to pass this bill because right now in Minnesota we're doing more harm than good. Okay, you said that. But then at the same time, what hypocrites we are, that we are putting into this legislation that we are going to need increase all of this help for our children in the schools when this gets legalized, because we see the problems coming down the road. From a standpoint of do no harm to our children, I do not support this bill, and I do not see how we as a state legislature should be putting so much energy into legalizing marijuana right now. Should not be a top priority in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf, and I do appreciate the use of the royal we, but let's try to steer clear of motives if we can. Next up, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson. When I was first elected 5 years ago, we were seeing trends of youth using vape cartridges with cannabis juice inside of them as we were working on Tobacco 21. What I'm wondering, I guess, within this bill, so this has been around the point that you're making, and in very unsafe ways. Some of the youth we were finding were making, or people were making it in their kitchen, and then young people were inhaling it. So what I want to know is, regarding with, since we are the education committee, what are the fines and fees for retailers and people that sell to youth? Do we have that covered in this legislation? And if not, if we could just maybe look at that. So we know that, and that's true for tobacco, it's true for cannabis. We could wish that, you know, our kids aren't going to get a hold of these things, but they are. So in the instance where retailers do sell to young, to minors under the age of 21, what does the bill do on that?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Edelson, I'm going to, for the specific dollar amounts, I'm going to ask Mr. Johnson to provide that information so that I don't misstate it, because oftentimes I'll try and answer things off the cuff and I'll be off by a little bit, and so it's best to consult with my attorney on these things. But there, it is something that we take seriously on the bill in trying to prevent access to kids and selling outside of the legal marketplace. And there are fines to that. In fact, I think you raise a good point about how people have access to cannabis, of course, through an illicit marketplace today, and that can have a lot of negative consequences in terms of what might be in that cannabis or how it might be presented, the method of delivery in a way that is not necessarily safe or subject to consumer protections. I received an email the other day that said illicit market in Minnesota today, they're lacing cannabis with fentanyl. I have no idea whether that's true or false, but the point would be that if you had a legitimate marketplace where you had testing and control, which is what this bill contemplates, that problem would not be a factor. You would be able to buy cannabis from a dispensary without having any concern about what else would be in it and whether the product was safe for you to consume. But as to the specific dollar amounts, I'll ask Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, briefly.
Madam Chair, members, again, Ben Johnson from House Research. There are two different sets of penalties. If an unlicensed entity is engaging in those sales, there are penalties that begin on page 28 of the bill, and those can range from small, relatively small penalties of $1,000 up to larger penalties of $1 million, depending on the amount sold. For a licensed entity that is engaging in an illegal sale, that's a license violation. The Office of Cannabis Management would be empowered to impose a monetary penalty of up to $10,000 per violation. That is on page 40 of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Stevenson, quick follow-up, because I have a few more people on the list.
Yeah, the one other thing I did want to say is we did just make a change to the bill also to implement a local licensing regime for retail markets, and part of that regime requires the local authorities to go and do a check once a year to test and see if they're selling to minors.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'd like to be more informed on it, and especially in regards to children, and so our Education Committee is perfect for that component. And I have two questions, and I'll just say outright, I see both sides of this issue, legalization, not, and so on. I have certain conditions I feel must be met before I'm willing to even to consider it, and I have a couple questions in regards to that. One is, can you inform me, please, what must be printed on the product? What are the actual statements or words?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett. So there are a few things that are written specifically. I mentioned one before about having the poison control phone number on it. And then there's a general requirement that the office develop scientifically supported labeling to address health issues with particular regard to pregnant women and breastfeeding mothers, for example, and young people. And Mr. Johnson, I am missing something. I am very confident maybe he can help me out if there's specific
Mr.
things.
Johnson, what's that third thing?
Madam Chair, there's a specific requirement that every package containing both flower or cannabinoid products contain the phrase, keep this product out of the reach of children. And then there is also the general ability for the office to establish other warnings and notices that must be on there, and then there's the poison control notice.
Yeah.
Representative Bennett, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we really don't know yet, and I will just state one of my concerns, which hopefully can be on the record. We know from psychologists and brain scientists that smoking cannabis up until about the age 25, while the brain is developing, is hugely harmful to the brain and causes, most agree, permanent brain damage of some sort. And I really feel it important, just like on cigarettes, I believe it says this product can cause cancer or something like that. I don't quote me because I don't smoke cigarettes, so I don't know for sure. But I think it's really important that some kind of statement there, and that should be posted in every school too, should be posted now actually, that the brain damage, not that, you know, young people don't think of those things often, but it certainly can't hurt. And I think a statement like that should be on there because it is a health risk and people should know going in, be fully informed as to what may happen to them. And I actually have family members who've been hurt in this way by cannabis. So that's one concern. Second question, Madam Chair. I'm curious what kind of testing is done for a staff person who's there's concern with intoxication, because from my knowledge, we don't have a test that shows intoxication at the moment. We can test if it's in the person's system. So the person could smoke cannabis at home 2 days before, and it could be in their system then 2 days later if they were tested at school. So what kind of test, is there an intoxication test? I know there are some that are prototypes, saliva tests, but how will that employee be tested to show intoxication?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett. You are correct that at present there isn't a good test that can measure whether you are, let me back up and say it this way. One thing I always want to point out when we have this discussion is that I think we tend to think of intoxication as something that can generally be tested because of our experience with alcohol. We have, you know, blood alcohol testing and breathalyzer testing that can demonstrate impairment on the basis of a numerical scale. And we think of that as the norm. It is actually the exception. It's like the only substance for which there is such a test. And there are many legal substances that you can consume that impair your ability to function, your judgment, that you wouldn't want people being responsible for kids if they were impaired, that are totally legal. If we think about, could be things, prescription drugs, could be some over-the-counter medication in some instances, right? And cannabis fits into that category. So the bill does have, as you mentioned, an oral fluid pilot project, and that project would go live this summer before legalization, you know, before dispensaries would come online and all of that, long before. We also are devoting money to behavioral testing to determine impairment and development and drug recognition expertise. So there's a lot going on there. I would just note that we aren't changing what's available for testing of impairment for school districts or any other employer for any other type of legal substance that you should not consume while you're responsible for children or otherwise. Those things are already available.
Thank you. Did you have a quick follow-up? I'm giving everybody three chances because we have to move
on. Chair, thank you. No more questions. And thank you, Representative Stevenson. I do still have concerns, and that's one of them. I mean, with prescription medication, you know, like you say, legal things that could impair you, there's a record there. So if the person seems impaired, they can go back and say, here's what's causing it. We can't have you in front of children or with children until you're not on that. But with cannabis, it's really difficult. And this is one of my concerns. And children are probably my highest concern with cannabis of what's going on. I can't support this bill in its current form because of that. I appreciate all your work. My goodness, this is huge. But thank you, Madam Chair. I won't take more of your time.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Next up, we have Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Just a couple quick questions. The on page 196, it talks about the school district developing a comprehensive education program. What standards is that program based off of, and where are those standards developed from?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, that is not, to my knowledge, articulated in the bill in terms of what standards it's based on. We have certain requirements for the bill that the model program has to be medically accurate, age and developmentally appropriate, culturally inclusive, grounded in science. It has to address certain subjects, including physical and mental health of cannabis use, substance use by children and adolescents, including the effects on brains in children and adolescents, unsafe or unhealthy behaviors associated with cannabis use and substance use, signs of substance use disorders, treatment options, and healthy coping strategies for children and adolescents. So those are sort of the principles by which we would expect the Department of Education to develop the model program.
Representative Baker, follow-up.
Yeah, so thank you, Representative Stevenson. So if I'm understanding right, the department will develop the model program, and then it'll be moved down to the local districts. So just two things, two quick comments. I think from an educational standpoint, our school districts are having more and more put on them and more expectations of things for them to teach. So I think we have to be very cautious when we're doing that, because obviously this would fit within the scope of health curriculum. I really appreciate the opt-out piece for parents. I think that's a really important piece. The other thing, just kind of more from a broad standpoint, this conversation feels very similar to me to a conversation a number of years ago centered around vapes. And we were told as principals, don't worry about it, it's not going to come into schools. And I can tell you I have a drawer full of vapes in my office right now. Some of them have tested positive for THC. So I just have a lot of concerns about this because of my past experience as a building principal handling this issue. So that's, I appreciate the time. Thank you,
Representative Baker. And just as a reminder, again, as Ms. Perez said, the standards for health are locally decided and developed. But I would love to have a conversation in the future on how we could bring that actually to the standard streams and the way we do it in every other academic area that we have. Next up, we have Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to quickly address, you know, we've had many conversations about this, and the most important thing is to keep it out, away from children. You know, it's, THC is not a lethal substance, but it certainly harms brain development. Just like alcohol or tobacco, if, you know, a teenager is smoking or drinking. One thing that I think we need to be aware of going through this, thinking how would we keep it out of our schools, is the main thing that puts it in our schools right now is the black market. There's already Delta 9 non-black market products that easily can, that are widely available in every single gas station with little to no regulation. I went to a private Christian school, and there were at least two weed dealers in my private Christian school. So to say that we can keep this out by continuing prohibition, I don't think bears out in reality. Although the crusade against vapes, tobacco vape, and allowing gummies to me doesn't make anything sense. I think that's hypocritical, but that's not in our committee. I do have some concerns about, we're a finance committee, and there is no fiscal note, but we discussed why we don't have it. But as it stands now, with the ultra-low license fees, I don't see how, we've talked about this, I don't see how any of these appropriations won't need to be continually appropriated from the general fund and not dedicated by this program. And that, I have great concerns with that, that we need to be able to fund it, and I think the licensing fees, as they stand now, aren't going to get the job done, and we can raise those. In this bill's present state, I know we're working together on it, and hopefully we can improve it. I don't think any Republican would support it, including myself, even though I think it's legalization is the right path for our state. But I know we're working on addressing some of our issues. And what my question is, after this long diatribe, so for my side of the aisle, is there something that you can say that is on the top of your mind in terms of winning Republican votes, changes you're willing to make? If you can give us one example of something you are definitely working on that can help make this a bipartisan bill.
Representative West, thank you for the question. I'll let Representative Stevenson briefly answer, but we are trying to keep to the articles that we have jurisdiction over because we do have another bill up. Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative West, I appreciate the question and I appreciate the conversations that we've had and I hope we'll continue to have on this bill as we work together to try and find something. I'll just note that so far I have accepted 8 Republican amendments into the bill, and I expect there will be many more in the long journey that this bill still has in front of it. To answer your question directly, since you raised the issue of license fees, I'll just point to that one and say that I think that the license fee structure in the bill is in need of adjustment. And you and I have had some conversations about how to do that, and I am open to doing that, and I think that we will find some common ground on that.
So, thank you. Thank you, Representative. Representative Anderson, and then I have Pryor and Crescia, and then we're going to a vote.
Thank you. And I will, I have lots of questions and opinions, but I'll keep them very focused on education and finance. You mentioned an intoxication test and that there really isn't any good, you know, test out there yet, but it's potentially being developed and there's some dollars in here. I don't actually know how much is being developed, but my concern is employees who work for schools who may be using cannabis if it's legalized, or even now, whatever, but and how you would determine whether they're actually intoxicated. And you have the same issue with students because it's pretty easy to tell if a student is, quote, alcohol intoxicated, but not necessarily if they're, you know, there's no test to tell if someone is intoxicated through cannabis use. But we shouldn't, we don't allow students to be in the classrooms, you know, if they were drunk, you know, so why would we allow them to be in the classroom if they're high? And, you know, where are we at with that testing? And I think that's a big issue for law enforcement, too, which is a whole other subject, you know, that we don't have jurisdiction over. But
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I would start by saying I would venture to guess, although unlike Representative Baker, I don't work in the schools, that we aren't in the practice of administering blood alcohol testing, breathalyzer testing, to determine whether students have drank alcohol. That if we think that they're drunk, we kind of piece that together through other observations. And I say that to point out that you don't need a test for intoxication necessarily to determine if someone is under the influence. And so that same thing would probably happen with cannabis. It, you know, I would, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe we are, we have breathalyzers in schools and we're breathalyzing kids. I don't think that's generally what's happening. So I don't think that the lack of a test here is going to be a barrier to addressing intoxication impairment when it occurs. And as I said to Representative Bennett, recall that alcohol is the outlier. Any other substance, we do not have the ability, you know, I shouldn't say any other, but for the vast majority of other substances, we don't have the ability to measure intoxication. We just have the ability to measure whether the substance has been consumed at some point in the fairly recent history. So it's not a unique problem in that respect, and we are addressing it.
Representative Anderson, brief follow-up.
Yep, very brief follow-up. So where are we at with the, and I agree, we're not breathalyzing kids, but we can tell if a kid is drunk, but at 8 in the morning, they're not, okay.
And
but where are we at with the whole ability to do testing?
Representative Stevenson, briefly, please, because we really do need to move on. And having worked in schools and having children, yes, you can tell when they're high, too.
Yeah, there are behavioral. There's behavioral.
I mean, actually, tell.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, there are behavioral tests, which I think is the where we're at now. There are things under development, including the oral fluid pilot that we've discussed here, that are promising. It's behavioral testing at the moment, which I think will be sufficient, particularly in the application of schools.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Representative Stephen. And I'm confident in our market that once there's enough states that legalize, somebody will figure out that it's lucrative to make a test and try to find out how to do that. Representative Pryor, briefly, and then I want to leave it to lead Crescia afterwards.
Briefly, my question is, and I know it's probably in the bill itself, but could you talk a little bit about timelines? Because as we've seen from the chart you've already provided, even right now, we're looking at this growth, and even though it's still not legal, there is this growth among our youth and children.
So it's like, you know, we do need to start moving on this and make sure that we expand our educational opportunities in the school with the MDE's recommended program for different model curriculums that they can use. And, you know, if we pass this bill, when would the money be available? And how quickly could that get to the schools?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Pryor, the appropriations are in fiscal 24 and fiscal 25, so as soon as when the fiscal year of 24 begins and the start of the next plan, right? And then the sections that are within this, I was looking at this as Mr. Johnson was going through, but the model program developments have, there's no specific effective date, which means that they would become effective this summer.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha, Lead Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I know a lot of work is gone to get to this point. So a couple of things that I'll just speak and I'll just come out. I don't support the bill. We're very technical about this bill. We're very technical about the definitions and we're very technical about the way we're handling conversations. And whenever we get to that level of argument, that means that there is a, and I'll just say it, there's a moral aversion to this. There's a moral and ethical aversion, and that's okay. Some people are still morally opposed to this. I'm one of them. I can go through the bill itself, but I'll tell you at the very base of my objection to this is I have a moral objection to this. Ethnically, I don't think this is the right thing to do. We're an education committee for that. We use the word impairment. Yes, I absolutely agree technically about detecting the levels of intoxication, but we're still using the word impairment. People that are using substances enter a level of impairment, and that does not improve what they do in life at that very moment. And I'll give you an example. We can detect impairment in kids. It's called dropouts in reading levels that are declined and brain damage. We can detect what impairment does. And so when I look at this, and Representative Stevenson, you start off with, you know, your premise was Minnesotans are ready for this, and prohibition is doing more harm than good. That's a great universal to the specific. I actually don't agree with that statement. That you know, that can be the statement that you carry through. But some adults want this, and some adults find the criminalization of this undesirable. I understand that. But that doesn't mean all Minnesotans want this. And it doesn't mean that all kids are ready for this or that all schools are going to be ready for this. When I look at this specifically to the bill, first of all, we have a $36,000 appropriation to MDE. With another one down the road, that's pithy money. I mean, that, for what the challenges these schools will be facing, and we have no school or school officials that I believe have come up and testified in opposition, but they will have opposition. They will have challenges. They will have things to face in this, and that little bit of money there it just isn't going to be enough. And it's a mandate. It's a mandate. I've been very open and honest about that we shouldn't be doing mandates. One thing that I'll take, and Madam Chair, I promise I'm not going to get off the topic, but I'm going to make a bit of an analogy because as I was thinking through and reading through this, and if you'll give me just a bit of latitude, Representative Stevenson, when I look at the section on this and we talk about the specific things that have to be in the model effects, we're talking about the mental and physical health effects of cannabis. We're basically laying out many of the unintended and undesirable consequences that we believe that cannabis use can do. And I thought about this for a second, and this is where I promise I'm not going to go crazy, but the analogy that stuck in my mind, if we were to back up and think about the reading programs that were put into schools, and if we had written something like this to say, you know, if we knew those unintended consequences, we wouldn't be having the incredible science of reading discussion we're having now. We wouldn't be talking about how we've let our kids down and the charlatans that took sales over literacy and reading. We would talk about the effects that's happening to kids. And so I look at this and I say, we have an opportunity now to look forward and say, we're going to be talking about the effects on these kids. We're going to be trying to fix that. I appreciate the parental review side of this, and I hope that we take that further into all other curriculums that we put out there, but that's not enough. That's just not enough. We're preemptively looking at poison control. We're preemptively looking at packaging. We're preemptively looking at the effects on the brain development. That's what we're doing right now. And, you know, the conversations that I've had just this week with schools and law enforcement in my area, in fact, a gentleman put methamphetamines, laced fentanyl, into a cavity of his body, went into a prison, and six prisoners overdosed. Six. I mean, these are real problems. And I'm not saying that we're not trying to address things. I go back to some adults can't handle this. But those, and I knew many of those people in that, from former students and so forth. But imagine, somebody put a substance in the cavity of their body to smuggle that into a prison, and then six people almost died. And thank goodness the Sheriff's Department was able to respond to that. This week alone, fentanyl, opioids, vaping, chronic addiction, broken families. And the one thing that I star here that I will take a moment and pause on, the incarceration that we know that breaks up families is absolutely detrimental. If we could handle the decriminalization of this, we should try. That incarceration rate and the way that disproportionately affects some demographics of our population is absolutely wrong. But this bill doesn't fix that. In fact, I think it's going to make it worse. We're talking about the word impairment, folks. We're in an education committee, and I will say this, because I know you have a lot to move on, and I'm pausing because every fiber of my body is screaming at me to come up with ways to get everybody in here to walk out of here and say, don't do this. Please don't do this. But we're about to. And Representative Vega, you can wave me off. That's fine. I get it. You can wave. But there are really, really...
We're not going to call out members' names at the table.
Okay, but
please be respectful and wrap it up.
I am trying to be respectful, which is why... And I'll back up. If there's any committee where this should be stopped, it's the Education Committee. Because when we look at and fully realize the negative effects and how this will be most costly and carried on the shoulders of our kids, I can accept this passing through all the other committees, and I can see that. But in the Education Committee, this is the one where we should put our foot down and say, no, you have a whole section dealing with how this is going to affect education to kids. Members, let's not do this.
Thank you, Lead Kreshaw. With that, members, Representative Stevenson, final comments.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, appreciate the good discussion and appreciate Representative Kreshaw's passion. I share the concern. But the reality is that the kids are already being impacted by cannabis. You heard Representative West talk about his particular experience in that respect. But prohibition isn't working. And if prohibition could solve the problems that we are talking about here, it would have already been done it. It would have done it a long time ago. The idea that we can make this illegal and solve all of these problems, it's not accurate. We have the data. We have the experience. We know that that's true. To try and achieve a different result by doing the same thing is madness. We need to do something different. We need to take a different approach, one that's more honest and responsible, and that's what this bill does. I ask for a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. With that, members, we'll move on to the vote. All those in favor of the motion, I will renew my motion for House File 100 to be re-referred to the Health Policy and Finance Committee. With that, members, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
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 The motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. The motion prevails. As you can tell, we don't send a lot of individual bills out of this committee. Representative Stevenson, thank you for joining us today. And then with that, we're going to have Representative Hassan come up to the table.
I do like this.
And while that's happening, members, please quiet down so we can get moving with our next item on the agenda. I'd also like to introduce, as you might have noticed, we have an extra page here today. Tom Hanley, he's our extra page. I shouldn't say extra page, you're an important page, along with Stephen Walker. We are a larger committee, so we got another set of hands, which we wanted to welcome him. So thank you. With that, Representative, Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 320 before the committee with the intention to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Committee?
So move.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, Representative Hassan, welcome back to the Ed Finance Committee. and I miss serving with you in the education realm. Why don't you go ahead, House File 320 is before us, and start your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a feeling this is going to be an easy bill after cannabis. Madam Chair and members, I'm very pleased to be the third to bring this bill the third time in front of you. House File 320 is the increase of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. This bill is very important to me because, as we all know, representation matters. Our youth and families are yearning for a more representative teaching workforce. Research is clear that all students benefit from teachers of color. This bill is essential in closing the persistent and unacceptable opportunity and achievement gap that we have in the state. Madam Chair and members, I love stories. I grew up with my grandparents telling me stories about my history, my culture, and many important aspects of who I am. So today I'll tell you a story. Imagine yourself as an 8 or 9 year old. Your world changed in the blink of an eye. As you travel to cross oceans, borders, continents, and fly thousands of miles away from home. You arrive in a new world, and everything looks strange. People look different. They speak different. They act different. You go to school where you understand nothing, and the teacher adds more attention to your case by mispronouncing your name. Everyone in the room laughs as your name sounds funny to them. For the rest of the year, the kids decide to call you Africa because it's easier than your name, as they say. Everything you are is reduced to the picture of starving children folks see when they hear African TV. And your people are reduced to enslavement. That's the history that you're given. That's who you are. As 10-year-old, it's hard to comprehend what's happening to you. You despise your parents for bringing you to this new world, and you shrink to the corner of the room. You keep shrinking and shrinking to a point where you become invisible. That was my story 20-plus years ago. And today you will hear students that have similar experience, as their teachers neither understand their lived experience nor validate their culture. Now back to the bill. In 2016, a year before the Teachers of Color Act was introduced, Republicans had the majority and the Democrats had the House majority, and they agreed to amend several statutes. And those of you who were serving at the time will remember. And then one of the statutes said that all students shall be provided, quote, improved and equitable access to effective and diverse teachers, end quote, who reflect the diversity of students in schools. Yet there continue to be a widening racial gap between students and their teachers, because the diversity of our student population is increasingly faster than the teacher diversity. This is mainly because we have only made very modest investment in the past 6 years without also making key policy changes to ensure our return investment. However, over the years, the Teachers of Color Act has had a bipartisan support with Republican lead authors in the Senate, Senator Abler and Senator Rarick. In the past 2 years, prior to 2020, the act had support from the House Republicans, including Rep. Ardal as the lead author and lead Krisha, along with Minority Leader Damath as co-authors. In 2020, the legislator and the governor approved some modest increased investment, and we have seen some modest increase in the number of FIPAC teachers and teacher candidates, but those investments were far short of what was proposed and stated by advocates needed to move the needle. Among the various finance-related components of this year's bill, here is the three things that it does. It strengthens various grant programs, including the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color, the CookMAC grant program, to meet the recommendations of the OLA report in 2021 proposes establishing new closing education opportunity gap grant program to support districts in addressing the persistent barriers to student success and makes increased strategic investment in various effective grant programs such as the Grow Your Own program to recruit, prepare, and retain the dramatically increased number of FIFAC teachers all of our students need as we continue to see the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers increase annually with the goal of having teachers of our teachers reflect our students by 2040. With that, Madam Speaker, I'm promoting you to Madam Speaker. Madam Chair, I'm excited about the testifiers that we have today, both here and virtually. And I would like to start centering the voices of our PIPAC youth by showing you a two-minute video, a youth testimonial from last session before our first testifier.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. We'll watch the video and then we'll move to testifiers. We'll work on that and come back to that if that you're okay. So members, we've got six testifiers on the list between testifiers for the bill and then public testimony.
Testifier is the superintendent of Burnfield School District, Teresa Battle.
Thank you. Please try to keep your testimony brief. Under 2 minutes would be greatly appreciated by the chair. Dr. Battle, thank you and welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. It's nice to see you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dr. Teresa Battle, and I am Superintendent of Independent School District 191, representing Burnsville, Egan, and Savage. I'm here to urge your full support of the needed investments and policies proposed in the Increase Teachers of Color Act. The 191 Board of Education legislative platform includes a provision to provide targeted funding to diversify our teaching staff. In 2019, the Board of Education and the Burnsville Education Association entered into a memorandum understanding to attract, recruit, and retain teachers in color. So this is a district commitment. My district student demographics have changed a lot in the past two decades, but not our teaching staff. We now enroll 69% students of color, but only 4% of our teaching staff are of color. For years, we have worked to increase the percentage of BIPOC teachers and other staff in our district, but only recently have we been able to access some state grants to support these efforts. We have been fortunate to receive funding for Grow Your Own Student Pathways, concurrent enrollment, and teacher mentorship and retention programs. We are proud that 75% of our students in our Education Pathway program are BIPOC. However, we were not awarded a Grow Your Own Adult Pathway grant to support our non-licensed staff to become teachers, despite our application receiving a 95% score by grant reviewers. We have a diverse group of non-licensed staff and parents who seek to teach in a K-12 setting. As an educator and administrator of color, I know that even when teachers of color enter the teaching field, many leave due to isolation, feelings of isolation and lack of emotional support. That's why I'm also excited to see continue the new Closing Education Opportunity Gaps grant program proposed in this bill. Please fully support the crucial investments and policies in this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Battle. Next up, we have Jessica Davis, and then on deck, we'll have Tamika Williams, who's going to be remote. Go ahead, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jess Davis. I began my career teaching high school mathematics at Harding High School in 2006. And it was during my time at South St. Paul's Secondary that I was named Minnesota's Teacher of the Year in 2019. I attended 1st through 12th public schools in Minnesota. I hold bachelor and master's degrees from two of Minnesota's finest institutions. And yet, as a biracial, black and white female in the field of STEM, I've never had a teacher who's looked like me. It's the missed opportunities as a student that motivate me as a teacher. Most students of color can't envision becoming teachers because they haven't had any or many teachers who reflect their own diversity. In my previous district, with almost 50% students of color, I was the only black teacher for almost a decade. I now serve as a racial equity instructional coach in St. Louis Park Public Schools, where I support other teachers' growth as culturally relevant educators. This is important work because our district enrolls 47% BIPOC students, but less than 15% of their teachers are people of color. Two of those teachers are my fellow Teachers of the Year, 2006 and 2016, and one of them inspires students and prospective teachers in her intro to urban education class for college credit. Working where 25% of the overall staff are BIPOC has become a place of affinity and safety for me and my other and others from the isolation of being the one or only in a district. St. Louis Park Public did not receive the Grow Your Own grant funding, but if you fully funded this grant program, it would help diversify our licensed teaching staff. The proposed increased funding for the Teacher Mentorship and Retention Grant Program is important in order to support the few BIPOC teachers in schools and districts to not only stay in the profession, but thrive. Consider it funding the cultural tax that we teachers of color pay every day. Finally, funding direct financial assistance to teacher candidates and teachers through scholarship, student teacher grants, and teacher loan repayment programs is essential to address one of the biggest barriers to entering and staying in the profession. Teachers are still grossly underpaid for the important work that we do. So helping reduce our debt while we're earning licensure is key. Thank you for your support on this bill. It's a bill that recognizes that increased investments are required to create systemic change and serve the needs of all of our students.
Thank you so much. We are very lucky to have you in St. Louis Park Schools. Next up, we have Tanika Williams, remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tanika Williams, and I am a licensed teacher and coordinate the Education Pathway Program at Henry High School in Minneapolis. Over 93% of our students identify as BIPOC, but less than 20% of our teaching staff identifies as BIPOC. This race gap is double that of the state, and there is a desperate need to diversify the educators of color in our school and all schools. As an educator of color teaching for 7 years in Minneapolis, I have witnessed the powerful impact that teachers from diverse backgrounds bring into the classroom. Students express to me how they feel seen, heard, and loved in my classroom, and that this is a safe space for them to be their authentic selves. In my work as the Education Pathway Coordinator and teacher, I am working to increase the number of future BIPOC educators through teaching college education courses for dual credit, as well as creating meaningful classroom experiences and out-of-school time opportunities such as internships. Minneapolis Public Schools was awarded the Grow Your Own grant funding, which has helped to fund my position and expand the number of courses offered for more students. Without this funding, our program would not expand and be accessible to students in North Minneapolis. We desperately need more funding to support educators of color by offering college courses that allow greater access to college, build college readiness skills, and create more pathways to enter the education field. Additional funding is also needed to support teacher candidates with money to pay for college, tuition, and expenses. Data, research, and my professional experience are clear that the education system is failing our most marginalized students, and if we truly want to change that, we desperately need the policies and increased funding proposed in this bill to train, mentor, support, and retain Black, Indigenous, people of color, in order to make education better for everyone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your time. And the last testifier we have listed is Violeta Hernandez. If you'd like to approach and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. It's almost afternoon. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Violeta Hernandez Espinosa. Good to see many of you. 6 years ago, I worked on the first Increased Teachers of Color Act when I was Education Legislative and Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. As many of you know, while parts of this bill have passed over the years,
It's quite unfortunate for students that are in our state that this legislation still hasn't fully passed. Now, fast forward, I'm coordinator of equity and inclusion for District 196, which is Rosemount, Apple Valley, Eagan schools. Our district strongly supports the policies and investments in House File 320. As the fourth largest district in the state, sometimes the third largest, with approximately 30,000 students, we have 42% students of color, but only 5% teachers of color. Addressing this racial and ethnic gap between students and teachers is a major priority for our district as we strive to close opportunity and achievement gaps. This challenging work requires systemic change with multiple interventions in terms of policies and investments, working simultaneously to attract, prepare, license, recruit, and retain increased percentages of BIPOC teachers. Our district has deployed various strategies to address this issue over the years. I will abstain from sharing them due to time, but we hope to strengthen and expand our efforts. But we do need additional funding and support. Thanks to funding from the Teacher Mentorship and Retention State Grant Program, during the past 2 years, we continue to improve our mentorship program for BIPOC teachers, along with our Teacher of Color Affinity Group. Both are critical to retention of our teachers of color. One particular program of interest to our district is the state's expanded GYO, or Grow Your Own program. With its high potential, unfortunately, the past 2 years, our Grow Your Own program application to help 30 of our 450 non-licensed staff of color has not been awarded despite nearly perfect scoring on our application due to the demand. We hope to finally be awarded a grant if you fully fund the Grow Your Own program, grant program as proposed for non-licensed adults and students. Increasing scholarship funding for our students to pursue teaching is also extremely important. Madam Chair and members, please approve the appropriation requests and important policies in this bill needed for a strong return on your investment. Thank you all for your work over the years on this, and I look forward to seeing where it goes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and we have found the video, and I want to make sure that we do have these important student voices centered as we further the discussion, and our page will be setting that up. And then after that, members, we have two people that have signed up for public testimony, and that is Laura Mokelson and Paul Spies. But we are going to watch the video first. We are lucky we have tech people here that know what they're doing.
It represents everything I've never had in my educational career.
Madam Chair and members, I have noticed since kindergarten, I've always had white teachers. I've never seen any black teachers in my life, and this is sad.
Oftentimes, students of color like me aren't able to have organic conversations with their teachers. Because of this, BIPOC students' concerns are often suppressed and left unheard.
My white teacher is silent until she left, with a curious stare.
When I was in math class, I remember one of the teachers had come in and he was asking students if he should enroll his son into the Gifted and Talented program. And he looked around and he was asking people to raise their hands if they were in the GATE program. And all the white students raised their hands, and none of the students of color raised their hands, minus one or two. And I think that this really demonstrates some of the systemic gaps. Students of color are more likely to be recognized and placed into these programs if they have teachers of color. And students of color are more likely to succeed in general if they have teachers of color.
If there were more teachers of color, many students of color in my community that I know would have kept trying instead of giving up on school. When I think about that six-year-old brown girl that was too scared to ask to use the bathroom, I think to myself that maybe, just maybe, if I'd had that connection, I would have been more courageous because I would have seen that brown girls like me could have had such important roles in society.
There should be teachers of different cultures teaching in our school.
Having teachers incorporate these different points of view has helped me to see my family,
myself and my committee as not villains, but heroes.
I want to finally see teachers of color being able to have input on the key decisions that affect their classroom.
As we remain 50th in the nation when it comes to racial disparities in education gaps, incorporating this bill and supporting Abu teachers of color is how we begin to close this gap.
Thank you. I just want to make sure. I know that we had the closed captioning on there, so it's a little easier to hear. Sorry about the echo. With that, members, public was asked to sign up to testify, and they have. So with us, we have Laura Mogelson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here today in support of House File 320. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I am from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education, or MACTE. This legislation represents necessary work to strengthen existing programs and to create new efforts needed to attract, prepare, license, and retain an increased number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. There are a few provisions I'll highlight our support of here, the first of which is the increase of funding to the Grow Your Own programs that benefit the communities across our whole state. These collaborations have grown in number since launching just a few years ago. They're partnerships between teacher preparation providers and local districts. Specifically, I'm talking about the adult pathways. And from the Association of Colleges of Teacher Ed perspective, we see great promise in this funding and in these collaborations in creating greater access to local communities, to people, future teachers of color and American Indian teachers, into higher education, licensure, and degree programs. But it needs funding. We also strongly support increases in funding to the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program, also referred to as CUGMEC, and the modifications to the statute language. This is a competitive grant program that providers write for to get funding to directly support our future teachers of color and American Indian teachers. It's a highly competitive grant program with far more requests for funding than dollars available to support the teacher candidates that are enrolled in the prep programs. In fact, just this morning, I was speaking with one of our higher ed members who wants to develop a partnership with a two-year college and create a matriculation pipeline that goes from two-year to four-year to licensed special education teachers. And this CUGMEC grant would be a perfect opportunity to be able to create a streamlined system of support. So with that, I just urge you to support House File 320. This is really important work. This funding could have great impact across the whole state of Minnesota. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Paul Spies. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Paul Spies. I'm the Legislative Action Team Lead for the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. I'd like to thank Representative Hassan for leading this bill the last several years, Chair Joachim for your leadership on this issue over the years. The Coalition is proud to include a wide range of endorsing organizations, including the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the State Superintendents Group and Principals Groups, Education Minnesota, and the state's Ethnic and Indian Affairs Councils, just to name a few. We agree with Representative Hassan to have conversations with the School Board Association and superintendents and principal associations to discuss ideas from their members how to further improve this bill. We are in a deep hole, members and chair. If we had a teaching population that reflected our student population, we'd have 20,000 more BIPOC teachers today than we do. 20,000 more BIPOC teachers than we do out of 63,000 teachers in the state. So the investments in this bill is the cost of making up for deferred investments in the past and the start having annual increases in the percentage of BIPOC teachers so that by 2040, hopefully we'll have a teaching population that reflects our increasingly diverse student population. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spies, and thank you for all your work on this over the years. With that, members, we can go a little bit over, so we have about 10 minutes for questions, and turn it over to folks. Remember, we are laying this bill over, and we'll be talking about it if we include it in the final omnibus bill as well. Representative Anderson, did you have questions?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure we have time, because there's so many provisions in this bill, which I think, you know, that we want to discuss. And
yes.
2 minutes or 10 minutes probably isn't long enough. I don't know if we can continue this on Tuesday.
We're laying it over, and we'll be coming back up again if we put it in a full bill. So go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start with... I just want to point out a few things. I'm very much opposed to this bill. I think we'll just start with simple things like eliminating requirements that teachers actually can pass reading and math and licensing exams, that they're competent to demonstrate that they know the science of reading. Those are all eliminated out of this bill. We're actually sort of, I would argue, you know, asking, lowering the bar for teachers in their reading and math knowledge through this bill. I'm also really want to point out, we just saw a legislative auditor report that talked about grants from the Education Department and the problem with that, including grants that were given to specific organizations through legislation. And in this bill, there is a $200,000 grant literally written into this bill to give dollars to this organization. I think that's very inappropriate. There's also in this bill things that are asking for requiring the Department of Education to give $250,000 grants to other organizations that might apply, and specifically. And I just, again, this is flies against everything that we were just told by the legislative auditor. And so I could go on and on, but I won't because we only have 13 minutes, but there are huge troubles with this bill. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Just as a reminder, the policy provisions were heard in education policy for almost an entire hearing, so we're focused in on the numbers, so thank you for mentioning the grants. Representative Hassan or Mr. Spies, do you have a comment on the grant portion?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative, I can't see your name.
Anderson.
Thank you for the concerns. What is unacceptable and shameful is the disparities that we have, that we are in number 50 for the same system that educates white students, and they prevail. It's failing students of color and American Indian students. That is something to be shameful. That is something to be discussed and disappointed. I will let Mr. Spicy talk about the grant. But I think that if there's anybody's going to be outraged, we should be outraged that we are leaving a significant portion of our society behind because of systems that we put in place that we keep praising and talking about. That's what, something to be shameful about, to be discussed, to be disappointed.
Mr. Spies, maybe briefly go over the grants and ones that we've been giving to educational institutions, from my understanding, is mostly where this goes. Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, Representative, as to the appropriation for the coalition is not staffed. There is no staff currently. It's a volunteer organization that's been moving this legislation over the last 7 years. And if this bill passes, if this legislation passes with the funding, there's going to be a lot of work to do to implement and have the return on investments across the state, working with agencies, districts, higher ed institutions, and teacher candidates and teachers to make sure that these outcomes are achieved. Mm-hmm. So that is why this appropriation is requested in there.
Thank you. Next up, I've got Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for your work on this bill. I know that you have been pushing this for many years. I know that your story represents so many students in our district, and I appreciate the boldness with this proposal. I appreciate the vision that it's laying out, and I think just the statistics alone, one-third of our teaching force would need to change to better represent our students, and I think we need really bold investments to get there. I just want to say one thing in relation to kind of the comments about, you know, the teaching licensure and the testing. You know, again, I think there's been a lot of work in policy around this, but I think it's, you know, important for our committee to be in conversation with what's happening in the policy. You know, as I understand it, the provisions in this bill really line up with the provisions from Pelsby around just the general changes to teacher licensure. I know that some of those bills are going to come before this committee because they do have a financial impact. But I just want to say that this is really backed up by what Pelsby is recommending based on lots of research and lots of insight about how we can get rid of barriers to teaching that really are actually not supporting making sure that we have better teachers in the classroom, that are keeping people out of the classroom. And also ensuring that we have really high standards for all teachers of color, all teachers in our state, including teachers of color, who can meet those standards. But the tests that we have right now are not a good measure
of that. Thank you, Representative Sumara, for reminding us there will be a day where we hear about four or five Pelsby bills, so because some of them have financial impacts. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. I'm very supportive. I think it's really important that we think about our history and where we are for a reason. In 1954, when Brown versus Board of Education passed, the Supreme Court decision was released, we had integration of our schools. But what we didn't have was integration of teachers of color, which existed, but we essentially killed the field. So I think it's really important that in these spaces we remember our history. We are correcting a wrong of our past. And I look forward to voting for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Bateberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. You referenced the historic bipartisan support of this bill going back. I think one of the things that we need to really have an honest conversation about is why are people not going into education? And some of the conversations, frankly, at this table can make people not want to go into education from both sides of the aisle. So we need to be cautious, and we need to support our educators and not talk down to them. We had a hearing where a principal and a teacher were called out by name by a testifier. That's unacceptable. So we have to have an honest conversation about why people are leaving education. Mr. Spies, to the allocation, it's MDE's job to implement these things, what we pass, and I would expect them to implement those things. So to say that we need a grant allocation, I think, is inaccurate. I just have a quick question for Representative Hassan. How many teachers or principals have been disciplined for incorporating contributions of racial or ethnic minorities into their curriculum?
Representative Hassan or Mr. Spies, briefly, that's really was discussed in policy. We're on the finance piece here. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I'm aware of that number. Do you know, Paul?
Mr. Spies? Yeah. Maybe that's something that can be taken offline. Any other further questions, Representative Baker?
Yeah, I think that's the one of the main concerns I have in this bill is that piece, tying the hands of administrators, school boards, for having local control about how they run their districts.
Thank you, Representative Baker. And you and I will have to chat afterwards. I'm not recalling that testimony because I don't think I would have let that happen in this committee. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hodan. I'm so proud of the dedication that you have on this legislation. I ran as a part of to be in this seat right here because of this act and the leadership of our educator of our former District 65B Rep. Carlos Mariani and Rena Moran, who were champions in acknowledging us to keep fighting for this. I have a family that is full of educators, Black, Brown, Indigenous. It shouldn't be that they continue to struggle to achieve these gaps as licensed teachers. We need more.
I can't go on without discussing the prison pipeline in this piece. When we have, and if you don't know, I advise all my colleagues to watch the film The 13th by Ava DuVernay, which shows you what happens to BIPOC students when we don't have a reflection of ourselves in the curriculum, let alone in our leadership and our educators. The outcome is the work that I've done in education, teaching as Tier 1 in Red Wing Correctional Boys Facility. When I see those young men and I think about the stories of what was shared, that I was the only person of color that they have ever seen teaching them a part of education. And I think these are 14-year-olds to 21-year-old young men. And you know what the ratio of those pupils are? I don't call them prisoners, of those students. It's black, brown, Latino, and indigenous, with a few white children as well. And they feel the equity of a failed system because they're not learning about each other and they're not learning about the diversity that they can get from our teachers. So thank you so much. I appreciate this. I look forward to continuing to supporting this and making it better for all of our students and all of our education systems. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Representative Bakeberg reminded me too of, with his comments, that sometimes it is hard for us to detangle policy and finance, but I appreciate the full conversations. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. Just quickly to Superintendent Battle, this is the second time I've seen you testify, and if I was still in the teaching field, I'd be honored to be a teacher under you. So, thank you. One quick question, or one comment and then a question. I really believe this gets to our need for just more quality teachers in general, coming from all walks of life and backgrounds. We just don't have a pipeline, and I think that is one thing we need to address first. Mr. Spees, you mentioned the statistic, and I just want to make sure I understand how you were trying to say it. You said if we were representative of the population, there'd be 20,000 more teachers of the 63. You weren't suggesting that we'd have 83,000, were you? You were suggesting that we would have 20 of the 63. So where would those other 20 go? Would we have a total of 83,000 in the state, therefore no pipeline problem?
Mr. Spees.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. I'm just a hypothetical. If 37% of our current teachers, 63,000, were BIPOC, we would have about 23,000 BIPOC teachers, but we only have about 3,000 currently.
I represent the
patient. And thank you for that. And I appreciate that. I understand trying to make the rhetorical, but the side of the matter is we don't have the 83,000 teachers. We just don't have the bodies. And we don't have this in any walks of life. So while I get the analogy where we're going, I don't think it's a fair comparison that just dumping money in this would suddenly fix that problem. I think there's good problems. I think there's good solutions. There's things we can look at, one of which is the hiring and letting go of teachers practice and the LIFO, which actually hurts new teachers of color. So with that, good luck with your bill.
Thank you, Lead Crescia. With that, we'll have Representative Clardy finish.
Great. I don't have to tell you I've been teaching for a long time. The reason I started teaching is because my daughter had, like, when she was in pre-K, she went to a Montessori, and she was reading and doing math with third graders. And then I had gotten divorced, and so I put her in a pretty prestigious private school. And like I said, she's reading and doing math with third graders. And I got a note home that said, could you please keep the beads quiet in her hair? Which elevated me to go into teaching. I was in a very successful career, making a lot more than teacher. But I also knew that it was morally and ethically my obligation to do this for the children that look like me or children that it could help mentor. And just like this bill, I think it's morally and ethically important to do that. I also think that we need to consider that the colleges or the preparatory schools are they're so steeped in like the efficacy of their practice, and they are not going to be turning out teachers that are not qualified, because that is their job. What I like about this bill is that there are a lot of safeguards that are built within it, within the program. So we're not just looking at hiring, but we're looking at how to retain. And just like me, when I was hired, there was basically, you know, not necessarily a hiring bonus, but I started at a higher step, which is something that needs to be done. So, and my last point that I really want to make is the importance of the Grow Your Own program. It removes a lot of barriers for people that historically have had a difficult time getting into teaching, and they've already been in the schools, and they understand the schools and the systems and the children. So thank you so much for bringing this bill. I would ask a question, but we're at the end. So yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Take that question offline. Representative Hassan, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for this wonderful conversation. This is the right thing to do. It's the morally and ethically right to increase teachers of color, and American Indian teachers. Our students are asking for it. Every student deserves to be seen, heard, and valued, and validated. So thank you for this conversation. I hope you can support this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. And with that, we'll renew the motion that House File 320 be laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. We're firming up the schedule for next week, and we'll be posting it soon. With that, we're adjourned.